This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 28th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. News headlines from around the Breaker's election coverage. The Big Deal feature, an interview with Richmond community activist Carrie Starchuk, who ran for Richmond City Council. She did not win a seat, but she does feel stronger for taking a step into the political arena for the first time. And a few words on low voter turnout with Chinese community activist and 2014 Vancouver mayoral candidate Mina Wong. I will also award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those that deserve it. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or was that an exciting election night on October 20th? It was also a little bit disappointing that a majority of citizens across British Columbia did not exercise their right to vote again. More than 60% of the population does not show up to vote for mayors and councillors. Vancouver has 8 women on a city council roster of 10. 5 of them are with the NPA, and some of them are on good terms with Adrian Carr, the popular Green councillor. There are now 2 more Greens on council, plus a member from the Left Wing's One City and a member from the Left Wing's COPE. Can the new mayor, Kennedy Stewart, find consensus like Mike Harcourt did in the 1980s at City Hall? Punk rocker Joe Keithley of DOA finally got elected for the Greens, breaking the Burnaby Citizens Association stranglehold on City Council. A City Council now headed by Mayor Mike Hurley, after Derek Corrigan was finally toppled after all these years. Surrey First is almost gone. City Council is now dominated by new-slash-old mayor Doug McCallum and his Safe Surrey Coalition. McCallum's promises to build a SkyTrain line to Langley instead of light rail in Surrey and switch from the RCMP to a municipal police force will be easier said than done. And in Richmond, Malcolm Brody coasted to another 4-year term as mayor. Runners-up Roy Cicada and Don Flintoff were surprises, as high-profile challenger Hong Guo finished a distant 4th. Guo can now focus her time on defending herself against professional misconduct charges from the Law Society of BC. Incumbents Derek Dang and Ken Johnston were both booted from council, replaced by newcomers Kelly Green and Michael Wolfe. Dang and Johnston are a cautionary tale for others in municipal politics. Do not become real estate developers while you're elected to serve the people. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for post-election headlines. First, 8 questions after the Vancouver election. What next for Vision Vancouver? Or should the question be, is there a next for Vision Vancouver? The party that dominated Vancouver since 2008 only managed to elect Ellen Wong to school board. The NPA's losing streak is at 4 elections in a row. Could the solution to its mayoral defeats be among its newly elected 5 city councillors? Watch out for Colleen Hardwick and Sarah Kirby-Young. Watch them closely for the next 4 years. Could one of them break the losing streak in 2022 for the NPA? Does Sadu Johnston stay as city manager? Why did Coalition Vancouver, Vancouver First, and Yes Vancouver run for the mayoralty and City Council, Park Board, and School Board? These 3 parties were aiming to defeat the NPA rather than seeking to win City Hall. Wei Young, Hector Bremner, and Fred Harding, they combined for more than 28,000 votes. Ken Sim and the NPA needed only 1,000 votes to beat Kennedy Stewart for the mayoralty. Why was Fred Harding in the race? The sleeper candidate with Vancouver First seemed to be asleep. The retired cop was best positioned among all the mayoral candidates to make law and order an issue. Shauna Sylvester, however, stole Fred Harding's thunder when she vowed to target casino money laundering late in the campaign. Will big money be gone next time? The NPA had a war chest of more than $830,000. That's more than the others combined. But the parties on the left, however, had Vancouver and District Labor Council support, not all of which will be reported to Elections BC. Because it doesn't have to all be reported to Elections BC, only the advertising expenses. Why so slow to get the results? At 2:21 p.m. on the afternoon of October 22nd, NPA leader Ken Sim finally conceded. He congratulated Mayor-elect Kennedy Stewart and apologized for the delay. But that's not the delay we should be wondering about. Within a half hour of the polls closing in Toronto on October 22nd, in that city's election, Mayor John Tory was declared re-elected. In Vancouver on October 20th, there was nothing, no results, for more than 75 minutes after the polls closed. There are 1,800 polls in Toronto, about 10 times more than Vancouver. The results flowed fast in Hogtown. In Vancouver, it was like molasses. And can someone do something about the number of candidates in Vancouver? There were 21 people running for mayor, and there were 71 for city council's 10 seats. Requiring 100 endorsement signatures instead of the 25 that's needed today could weed out some of the vanity candidates. So would a spring runoff election that would help cut the field in half. It would also encourage earlier engagement in the process. More headlines about the Vancouver election from the Breaker.News. The end of Vision Vancouver means the end of Vancouver's secret government. It is a little-known fact that Gregor Robertson and the Vision Vancouver City Councillors meet as a caucus. But when I asked the Freedom of Information Office, I was told there are no records. Quote, the mayor's office confirms there are no agendas or minutes for the caucus meetings held. It was also confirmed there are no meeting notes, said the response from City Hall last November. Quote, the caucus meetings are only verbal party updates and verbal discussions regarding regional, provincial, and federal issues, as well as upcoming events, end quote. I found that's not true. There was policymaking in these secret meetings. Among the messages in Mayor Gregor Robertson's secret Gmail account that I accessed under FOI was a message from Councillor Heather Deal in May 2016 about a motion she was crafting for City Council about public art. Wrote Deal, once you have signed off, I will send it to caucus. It has to go to clerk before caucus on Tuesday. Quote, in the opinion of a prominent British Columbia municipal affairs lawyer, Vision Vancouver was breaking the law by running a secret government. Quote, if they are caucusing, they have a problem. Quote, said Raymond Young in a September 2015 Vancouver Sun story. Quote, that's a council meeting. Young's presentation to the 2015 Union of British Columbia Municipalities Convention on the laws surrounding open meetings said that a meeting includes any deliberation involving a quorum of members of a governing body to discuss any public business or policy over which they have control. In Vancouver, where there are 10 councillors and the mayor, the quorum is 6. Robertson, plus Heather Deal, Carrie Jang, Raymond Louis, Andrea Reimer, and Tim Stevenson. The number was 7 before Jeff Meggs quit City Council to become Premier John Horgan's Chief of Staff in July 2017. It will soon be 0 after the only remaining incumbent, Deal, lost on October 20th. Vision Vancouver did not follow the ombudsperson's advice, nor did it live up to Robertson's December 8, 2008 swearing-in speech. In that speech, Robertson said that when the city uses your money, you have a right to know where it's being spent and what it's being used for. When leaders fall short of that standard, public confidence is shaken. Robertson also said, I will not let you down on making City Hall more open and accountable. The Office of the Information and Privacy Commissioner told The Breaker in January that it was powerless to act because there is no duty to document law. Premier John Horgan has not delivered on a duty to document promise that was contained in the party's 2017 election platform, a platform that was developed with input from former Vision Vancouver City Councillor Jeff Meggs. Also on the Breaker.News, video clips show NPA boosters near South Vancouver voting station. A little bit too close for comfort. The Breaker showed exclusive footage of apparent breaches of election laws outside the Ross Street Temple in South Vancouver. The video shows a pickup truck plastered with NPA candidate signs driving slowly in the parking lot near the voting station entrance. Another clip shows a man handing a woman a piece of paper with the names of the NPA's mayoral candidate, Ken Sim, City Council candidate, David Grewal, and Park Board candidate, Pal Beasla. Beasla is a treasurer for the Khalsa Dewan Society, which is based at the temple.
And the voting station is right there at Ross Street Temple. And we have this party here circling the parking lot campaigning. And we have those two over there giving out white pieces of paper saying support the boys, Indian boys.
Penalties for campaigning within the 100-meter buffer zone while an election is happening are 1 year in jail and or a $5,000 fine. City of Vancouver's elections office is investigating. Those are headlines about the Vancouver election from the Breaker.news, where you can read more of those stories. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. Most of the candidates in the October 20th municipal elections in British Columbia lost. One of them was Richmond community activist Kerry Starchuk. But Starchuk has no regrets. She feels that she did the right thing by putting her name forward for city council in Richmond, which is a city at the crossroads. Starchuk has campaigned for the last 8 years for English language on signs in Richmond, where more than 60% of the population is ethnic Chinese. She has also led petitions to the House of Commons in an effort to curb birth tourism. Starchuk's campaign signs said, "Community matters." She is afraid that her hometown is coming apart because of a widening cultural and economic divide. I sat down with Starchuk at her home a week after she received almost 7,000 votes. I asked her why she threw her hat in the ring.
I ran for election because I was getting a lot of pressure from different people in the public to tell me that I needed to run for election. And I had been an activist for 8 years, and I thought, well, maybe this would push me to the next limit. I would get more recognized. So I signed myself up.
You managed to attract 6,969 votes exactly. Mm-hmm. You were 22nd in the list of candidates for city council. Didn't make it on in your first try. A lot of people don't make it on in their first try. But talk about the process to go through that almost month-long campaign to get almost 7,000 votes and to go all around Richmond, meet new people and reacquaint people who are of the similar mindset as you are.
Well, it was pretty exciting. It was very intense, a lot of work to do. But talking to the public, a lot of people knew me. They had read about me in the newspaper. They were voting for me. It was a good way to send my message out. People were questioning what was going on in the community. They didn't know what it was. So I was actually sat down, made the time to talk to them, try to explain to them what was going on. And they really thanked me in the end. It was a good way to take my message to the next level. And after the election, it was even better because a lot of people told me they were voting for me and they actually thanked me for my activism. For the 8 years that I was doing, I was in the newspaper, but there was nobody actually thanking me for what I was doing. So I think people would say I put my money where my mouth was. I actually took it to the next level so that the politicians at City Hall were going to take me more seriously.
Almost 7,000 people took the step to thank you, to support you on election day, on the ballots. Before then, of course, though, your message was part of the public discourse. Mm-hmm. People who went to debates here in Richmond heard people ask questions about the issues that you have brought to the fore, about English in the city of Richmond, as well as birth tourism. How does that make you feel when you heard people talking about that, not just asking you, but asking other candidates?
I think it's fantastic. That's what we needed to have a discussion about. So often it was dismissed because the process of what I was doing is I was taking my issues to council and being dismissed. This part where running for council and putting on to the public to actually evaluate was much better. So I think it's a good thing that would happen.
What one big thing did you learn about Richmond, and what big thing did you learn about yourself during the campaign?
Oh, the big thing I learned is it was a much bigger challenge of going for city council than I knew, because I got lots of letters, emails from the different people, lobbyists like TransLink and the Richmond News, the Sentinel, they were all asking you questions. So it was to do with cannabis, it was to do with the tunnel. So it actually made you really broaden your the issues were much even bigger than what I had been concentrating on. And what did I learn about myself? I learned that I challenged myself to be put to the public. I challenged myself to write and answer questions honestly. It actually made me realize where my strengths and weaknesses were. And so what I realized, the part that I needed to do is I need to work on to taking the tremble out of my voice. Is there so much emotion and there's so much grief what I'm feeling about Richmond that it was hard to actually stand up there and say something very clear because of what I'm feeling in the community. And I had a cold as well, so my message wasn't as strong as what it could be, but it's also the emotion I'm feeling. So I will concentrate more on trying to get my message with not feeling the grief that I'm feeling. It's hard to explain. I mean, some people are looking at it from a job point of view or a position, a power. My voice was actually for the people of Richmond and what we're feeling of a loss of community. And so that's where I need to improve on, is my voice needs to be stronger and for people to feel the strength in my voice. But during the election, it was hard. But talking to the people individually, it was great because it was a one-on-one and making everybody feel part of the community.
What's next for Richmond and for you? There's a new council in Richmond, the same mayor, Malcolm Brody, who got reelected by a large margin, but there's a new council with some new faces. Derek Dang and Ken Johnston were voted off council, and Kelly Green and Michael Wolf were voted on council. There was an appetite for change in City of Richmond on October 20th, because the issues here are issues that you brought to the fore, that there's a communication problem in this community, that people from different cultures, if they can't speak a common language, have an immediate barrier and can't get the solutions that are needed to improve a community. So what next for Richmond and for you?
Well, I'm not giving up. I'll stay strong on what needs to get fixed. In terms of a new council, I'm not sure that we had enough of a change to actually make a difference. If we go back to the mayor, I think the reason why we have the mayor is people voted for the devil they know than the devil they don't know. They didn't know enough about, you know, the other people, and they felt that, you know, at least they knew what to expect of our mayor. And then you look at Michael Wolf. Hopefully he will be the new voice, because he's worked at it for a very, very long time, and he deserves a spot on council. But we're at like kind of a middle part. We don't have the a majority quite yet. So it could, even though we have new people, it still could be that 50-50, one vote away. But it's good that we don't have all the majority of it be developers. That's a good thing. But we need to have the voice of the people. And what I can see now with the people that are elected still are being influenced by the developers. And that's the part that's is concerning, because we should actually be having a council that has the interest of all the people of Richmond, not specific groups that are lobbying particular candidates or the people that are on council today.
Through your efforts, Richmond has gained national and international attention for the good, the bad, the ugly. You've shown that one person can make a difference. One person speaking out can make a difference. What is your advice to other people who think they're voiceless in other communities, you know, in British Columbia, in Canada, anywhere else who might be listening today?
So I don't know if your audience knows that my first interview was with South Korea. Then I went to Australia and Germany, Taiwan, Seattle. They've all come to my house. And, you know, I've just I believed in my message was. So I did everything I could to bring awareness to whatever those people needed when they came here. And if I can make a difference, certainly someone else that has an issue needs to speak up and have a voice too. People are too afraid to say anything because they'll be called racist, xenophobic, anything. If you post something, their reputation be ruined. That's what their fear is, political correctness. And to me, I've gone through all of that, but I believe in my heart what has gone wrong in Richmond is based on they're too anybody's too afraid to say anything. And to me, it's disappointing, you know, when the politicians have told me to take the money and run. My area is 75% Chinese. I need to move. I need to move to Ladner. That's not the answers. And so you just got to keep plugging along and thinking, why are they telling me that? And keep challenging them. And I encourage other people to get involved. I mean, we had 30 people that run for city council, that's a lot. And if all those 30 people got on council, or we meet outside of now that the election, the people aren't elected, and we form some kind of citizen group, and then empower those people to be part of the solutions. Because if we're just going to rely on the 8 people, it might not be enough for Richmond.
That was Richmond community activist and 2018 city council candidate in Richmond, Carrie Starchuk. Across British Columbia, on October 20th, an average of only 36% of eligible voters cast ballots in the local government elections. In Victoria, it was 45%, in Vancouver, 39%, but in Surrey, turnout was 33%. Chinese community activist Mina Wong said that the government is to blame for not emphasizing civic education in schools or doing enough to teach new Canadians about the rules around voting. Wong ran for mayor of Vancouver with Cope in 2014. This is what she had to say to The Breaker.
I just don't understand people complain so much and yet they don't engage, they don't talk about politics. They just say it's dirty. And I say, yeah, it's dirty because you don't get involved. You let them do whatever they want. You let them buy, you know, and then in return for their, you know, yeah, pay for assets, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's, I always say that whatever the government we get, we are responsible as voters. We are responsible. So get engaged. And we have to push government to increase civic engagement, civic education. We, as a voter, we need to push them and say, hey, we need that. Look what happened. We cannot allow that to happen next time. It's not fair, right?
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the candidates, the election staff, and most of all, the voters. Everyone who participated in the October 20th local government elections around British Columbia. Our democracy is far from perfect, and some say we don't really have a democracy, but that's a whole other conversation. It does need fixing in oh so many ways. But the alternative is much, much worse. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to Bob at thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 28th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on October 28th in 1929, it was Black Monday on Wall Street when the stock exchange crashed? The Dow Jones lost 13% in one day. Now you know. Send your feedback, send your story ideas to me at bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.